You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR Newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He's speaking to us from Arizona. Welcome back to the show, Mark.
They're always glad to be here, Jim. Thanks for having me.
So the Chinese have landed on the moon, but not the one that we think of.
Real interesting stuff. You know, I try to look at the extraterrestrial space phenomenon, and both in terms of not only alien contact, but in terms of just good old space weather, in terms of what's going on around the planet and so forth, and all the studies regarding the moon itself. And there's a lot of questions whether the moon was physically created, or is it possibly an artificial satellite that was brought here? And what part of that thinking is some usual analysis related to the moon, and particularly vibrations that were caused when a portion of a rocket was jettisoned and hit the moon, and vibration studies were done, and it didn't act like a normal body. So that's a whole other discussion, which I've featured before. But we talk about the moon in other ways because of the lunar cycles. In fact, we got a full moon coming up on July 14th. So sometimes we get short-term change of directions. But on your question just a couple of days ago, and this is totally new to me as well, so the China National Space Administration, and they've been pretty active. If you remember, they were the first ones supposedly that photographed the dark side of the moon a few years ago, though I feel we've done it. They just never discussed it, but it's called the Tianwen-2 probe, and it arrived at an asteroid, and I'm not going to give you the number. It's a long number. But it's a space rock that loops around our planet once a year, and they call it a mini moon in the article, and about the size of a house, they say. So it circles the Earth, and there's a lot of theories about if it's a break off of the moon itself or just another asteroid. It's somewhat termed a quasi satellite. So it's like a lazy corkscrew, orbit. And they took pictures of it, and the only way they can determine if it's part of the moon or not, they would have to, take a piece of it and bring it back for analysis, and I guess compare it to other moon rocks that either they have acquired or whether the U.S. Has acquired. So, there's a lot of theories about it, about how it was formed and where it comes from, but that sort of drove me into, analysis that I've done before. And many of you heard this or saw this in my newsletter, but, there's a lot of dwarf planets and other stuff in our solar system that are just never talked about or discussed unless you're into astronomy. In fact, I'm headed up to Flagstaff this weekend. I'm going to spend the rest of the summer up there, and I spend a lot of time at the Lowell Observatory, which is really great. If you're ever in Arizona, it's been classified, at least by one major magazine, as a top science center in the continental U.S. But besides the dwarf planets, I'm going to read off some of these to you. It's really fascinating stuff because, you're just not taught this. I mean, it doesn't come out in the press and general discussion, but besides Pluto, which they consider as a dwarf planet, there's an object called Ceres, C-E-R-E-S. It's about 600 miles in size, and it orbits between Mars and Jupiter, and it does contain water and ice on its surface, which is really interesting. Another one called Eris, E-R-I-S, smaller than Pluto. It's a little more massive and has a moon of its own, believe it or not. So let's see where, that's located. They say it's about 68 AU units from the sun. And it's one of the most distant dwarf planets, but it's out there. They found it. That's really interesting stuff. Another one called Haumea. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it correctly. It's a football-shaped object, and it has rings and two moons on it, believe it or not. And this one is way out there. This is only about 35 to 51 astronomical units, AUs they call them. And it's interesting because it spins once every 4 hours, making it one of the fastest rotating objects in the solar system. I guess that's maybe how they found it. Another one called Makemake or Makemake is similar to the size of the Haumea. It also has a moon of its own, believe it or not. And, you know, this one is also way out there, 39 to 50 AU astronomical units. And they say it's one of the brightest in the KUIPER belt, the Kuiper belt objects that has a thin seasonal atmosphere. And that's, you know, that's out there. And there's some others that I can discuss as well. So fascinating stuff. You know, we read about this little mini moon, and we've got the lunar cycle coming up, and we got a lot of stuff floating around out there. And, you know, we've had, in addition to all this, we've had some activity on the sun in recent sessions. We had a big solar, storm, huge one. We highlighted that in our letter just the other day, and it was facing toward the Earth. And, you know, when we start seeing volatility in the markets and all kinds of stuff, you know, I don't always look to what the financial press is telling us. So what, you know, the commentators are telling us economically, you know, I say, could there be some attribution to the position of the moon or solar activity or our season, where we are in our seasonal patterns and so forth. And, you know, we just came out of the summer solstice here in the last couple of weeks. So, you know, in my opinion, that had a lot to do with the volatility we've seen in the market. The fact that we had a bit of a correction in some of the high-flying stocks, for example, and the gold came down and started selling off again and all kinds of fun stuff. And, of course, we had the war starting back in the Mideast. So, you know, I'm a big believer that there's correlation between the astronomical and some say astrological positions and its effect on the Earth, and we're not so immune or impervious or standalone as we are led to believe, or I guess implied to believe. So that's sort of really cool, what's going on there. And getting off on a bit of a tangent, of course, I want to touch on the spiritual too, or the extraterrestrial, because that's always top of my subjects. But I thought it was a great film this weekend. It was called Young George Washington. And, you know, in the whole list of extraterrestrial encounters or experiences, and this is, they researched it, it's not been fully verified, but there was all these stories that George Washington had been chosen or protected by some extraterrestrial entity, and some may say it just an angel or spiritual connection, nothing to do with the extraterrestrial presence. But this has been a story, been in, oh, I think it was first published in the mid-19th century. In any event, there's a scene in the film where, you know, he's shot multiple times by an Indian tribes. This was going on, by the way, in the mid-1700s, or at the time of the French-Indian Wars, when he was beginning his career. And there's a great scene in there, which I actually put in the newsletter. You can actually watch the little video. It runs maybe 30 seconds. So it was a scene where, you know, after he was shot, because apparently there were holes in his jacket and he wasn't hurt. And they say their tribesmen never miss, and they shot him and he should be dead. And I guess it was the shaman of the tribe asked him to come up and speak to him and say, "Who are you? What's your name?" And of course he said who he was. And he said, you know, in their belief, there's a great spirit that protects those who have destiny. And those who have destiny are protected by the great spirit. And that's how they can interpret the fact that he wasn't killed or injured during this particular battle that was cited or shown in the film. But, you know, it really hit home with me because, you know, I believe in protection in the spirit world and thing and forces that we can't normally explain, and we see that even in our paranormal or extraterrestrial analysis that's been going on for literally, you know, thousands of years, and even, you know, in the last 100 years in terms of UFO or UAP activity and so forth. So I just thought that scene was really, really meaningful to me. And it also brought me to the subject of, you know, encounters and things we've seen, and how we react and how they're portrayed by our government, which is notorious for covering everything up, which is just a common response to what's been happening. So back in 1997, I think it was in March, we had what was known here in Arizona as the Phoenix Lights. So there's a great video, recreation of the event, which I posted on the website too, since I experienced it and I was here. It was actually 3 months before my youngest son was born. So you have to see the video, because this huge craft, which was a mile wide, it transverses northern Arizona, comes over the rim by east of Flagstaff, turns south, and just comes right over Phoenix and heads down to Tucson, and ultimately just zooms up and disappears into space. So what was interesting about the event was not only did the governor here in Arizona see it and thousands of people see it, maybe more than thousands of people, the military sent fighter jets out to intercept it, and they did encounter it. They were sent from the Phoenix base here in Phoenix, the Air Force base here in Phoenix. They were told to turn back so there wouldn't be any encounter or any conflict with the craft. And then when they came back, another group of jets came out of the Dotham Air Force Base down in Tucson. They shot up a bunch of flares in the sky, tons of them, and I guess sort of a distraction or a psyop to try to get people thinking that, oh man, all they saw were these flares in the sky, not some type of craft with lights coming over the state. So it depicts, the fraud on the part of the government and the deception, which has been, unfortunately, something that I've experienced and studied with for about 60 years of my life, and those that I've been in touch with that are close to the subject. So, gotta watch it. It's on my VRTrader.com website, and obviously, if you want to subscribe to my newsletter, I'd be happy to have you as a subscriber as well. In terms of the markets, Jim, we're having some volatility here in the markets, and I think it's part and parcel to the astronomical, astrological, whatever you want to call it, activity out there. The moon, coming up this week, we had the summer solstice. We had a bunch of solar activity, which I've mentioned, and my forecast model, which is published in the newsletter we sell every year, just said watch out for July. There might be some type of volatility or correction here, and certainly much of this was triggered around the time of the summer solstice, around June 2021, when we start to see some of the high-tech stocks starting to come under pressure. So as I mentioned, I'm probably repeating myself, but the bottom line is, I look to other things besides, what's on the television networks or what they feed you in the financial press is about what causes things, and worrying about what the Fed is saying and what the Fed is not saying, and whether rates are going up or rates are going down, or whether earnings reports of companies are going to be able to maintain, particularly in the chip sector, the same type of growth that they have, and whether the U.S. government is investing in new companies or different companies like they did with Intel and all these other stories and variations, and what SpaceX doing this week versus its IPO, and what's the future of Anthropic and some of the other IPOs that are supposedly coming later in the year, and OpenAI is another one. So rather than look at that, I try to put all the pieces together and say, well, if my model says we might see some volatility, we got some astronomical elements out there, it might be something to pay attention to. So, there's always individual stocks moving and trading, and we try to look for that as well. But really interesting week, a lot of stuff going on with, watching that film and sort of researching other bodies that we have in the solar system and things that, are out there that are just part of our existence that are not much discussed. And it also opens up the big question, what haven't we not seen or discovered yet, which is, I'm sure, infinite. And that's sort of the summary of where I'm at.
Mark, I know you're interested in the subject of mining asteroids. Do you think the Chinese landing on this tiny moon had something to do with that?
Well, according to the report, they haven't landed on it. They took a picture of it.
Oh, well.
And the China National Space Administration announced it, and they said that there's a nice picture here, and I can reproduce it and put it on the website. I'm a big believer in that. We've already discussed that, and it's been discovered or analyzed as huge mineral deposits, rare earths, gold, silver, all kinds of stuff out there. And we have the secret space program that's existed for decades, which is not admitted or discussed, but there's plenty of anecdotal evidence regarding its existence. And, you know, we could already be out there, you know, mining some of these asteroids or an asteroid and bringing stuff back that we need here on Earth. And, you know, the question is, well, you know, it's too expensive. Look at the cost of mining. Look at the cost of getting there. But they're not giving any consideration to the fact that the technology that we're using is so far advanced to what we are being told that that question is not even relevant. In other words, we have craft that are, in my opinion, already on Mars, already on the moon. They have traveled through the solar system, and they've done a lot of wild things. And, you know, there's actually a great analyst, I'm trying to remember his name, who was talking about the faces of Mars, and he did a big United Nations presentation back in the 1980s, and I actually had a conversation with him way back then, and he told me, so he monitored craft leaving the Earth, following trajectories and speed that were beyond anything that current science could possibly have created, stuff that's going from the Earth to the Moon in seconds, and unbelievable statements that he had made to me at the time. And since he was a very renowned planetary scientist, obviously I gave him a lot of credence for what he was saying. So to answer your question, you know, we may be on those asteroids already. We may be mining them already because we're already on other bodies in our solar system already, which are not being admitted. And I'm sure Elon Musk has been told not to say anything that he might know that might confirm this. And I'm sure he's been warned about saying things. I'm sure he probably, being as brilliant as he is, I'm sure he knows things that are happening. So the planned trip to Mars that Elon is talking about has already happened, but we have to do it in our own way to make things look legitimate. So that's what's going to happen at some point in the future. There was an interesting picture from the Martian surface. The last few years, there was a rover or some other craft on the planet that apparently became disabled. And there was a photograph from it that, you know, it couldn't move around, but it could take a picture. And the picture I saw, now you can't find this anywhere, but it showed a shadow of a human being leaning over the craft trying to fix it. And when I saw that picture, it was so clear to me that we are there. We have a base there in operation, and we had sent out a team to fix the darn thing, and I'm trying to remember if we actually fixed it or not. So, yes, I'm a writer and financial commentator, but I'm also an investigative journalist, and I've done this for decades, and this is why I got off so much on the extraterrestrial and the UFO phenomenon, because it's actually the greatest story of our time, and all the conflicts on our Earth, ranging from Ukraine to the Mideast to China to everything else, dwarf as compared to the significance of these events. And unfortunately, we're not being told about it. And there was a great interview, in fact, on the web the other day, and I was watching it, and it was apparently an intelligence man who was serving during the Reagan administration, and I was unaware of this, but apparently there are class clearances that are higher than the President of the United States, that there are apparently those that have clearance issued to them that even the President doesn't have. And in this interview he was being described by someone who knew him, who had talked to him, and said basically he had a clearance much higher than Reagan at the time, and he was apparently very shaken up by the fact that he had told this fellow in the interview, confirming the existence of the extraterrestrial presence. And if you remember, Ronald Reagan himself made a presentation, I think it was in 1987 or 86 at the United Nations, and you can get a copy of it and watch the video where he stands in front of the United Nations and I'm paraphrasing because I don't have the exact words, but he said in effect, what will we all do here on Earth if we were confronted by an extraterrestrial alien presence? Would that bring us together? And I'm sort of paraphrasing what he said, and you can actually get a recording of this. Now, in my mind, why would that even occur? And it only occurred because he was either aware of it, been told it, experienced it, and I know he was a big believer based on some of the research that I have done. So I'm happy that Donald Trump is releasing information. Every, you know, couple of weeks we have it. I mentioned in the last interview, I think they just had their last one, but they had this program on the film Disclosure that Spielberg had just produced. It was called Disclosure Day. It's put by an entity called the New Paradigm Institute. And Danny Sheehan, who is a recognized lawyer, in fact, he's had cases before the Supreme Court and all kinds of wild stuff, really credible guy. He's sort of presenting the case at the New Paradigm Institute, discussing the film and discussing what's going on out there. And if you have any curiosity whatsoever about what's really going on in this world, I would get to the New Paradigm Institute. You either become a member or try to access their videos and listen to some of the discussions, not only about the Disclosure film itself, but about what's generally, been going on. But back up to this Reagan thing, I mean, it's all sort of connected, and, it's influenced me a great deal. And, it makes me very skeptical of, the markets and news and everything else. And, I think that's one of the reasons I'm a survivor and been reasonably successful over the years, because generally if I hear a news story, I tend not to believe it or figure who's benefiting from it coming out, or is it really true, or those who are front-running the news who knew it was coming before it did. And, these are not great revelations on my part. I think many of our listeners probably would accept all this as part of their thinking as well, but just part and parcel to what's going on. So, we get off a little bit of a tangent here today on the interview, but just stuff that I thought might interest some of our listeners.
We'll have more with Mark Leibovitz right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Mark Leibovitz. Mark, what's your view on crude oil with the on-again, off-again war with Iran?
Well, I've been bullish on crude oil with this correction. In fact, we're long, one of the big oil stocks, not only because it pays a great dividend, but because our cycle work said you're going to get a nice shakeout, and you're going to come down, and then you're going to get a rally, and then down a little bit, and then back up again. I think it's a function of demand for the product, and the world depends on crude oil. There's a lot of reserves that have to be replenished because of what's happening, what's ongoing, and so forth. I mean, crude oil is just not running automobiles. About just about everything we produce or make's got some type of form of crude oil component to it. Unfortunately, of those who don't like crude oil, that's part of the truth. So, I think we're going to retest the $120 high, and then there's probably a 6-month comment. I mean, I'm not saying it's happening this week. Between now and mid 27, we're going to go back up there and retest the high or make another high at some point and trade around. So I'm pretty much a buyer on weakness as a trader. And if there's a little shakeout, probably an opportunity, but there are ways you could play it because, some of these oil companies, most of them are making money. I mean, they make money at $60 a barrel, and they make money at $120 a barrel, and they have great, cash flows, and they're just great investments. So, whether you believe crude oil is going up or down right away or not, as I do, going up mostly in time, I think you can make money with those shares.
Is gold going to come back?
No question about it. The question is, how long are you going to live to see it happen? I mean, I'm very cynical about this because, I'm buying gold. I remember I've lived in Sedona, Arizona for many years, and I'm buying gold at $300 an ounce, $400. He had paid up to $500 at the time, which was a lot at that time. And, watch it over the years go up and down and, go up to 1900, then back to 1000, and then, you know, what we saw happen here. And we're talking, you know, a full 40 years of volatility. And we don't even have to talk about silver, which has been crazy. I mean, you know, when I first started, it was a couple bucks an ounce, and been all over the place. So, yes, I think it should. You know, barring this asteroid discussion we had earlier, that suddenly a tremendous new supply of gold or precious metals and the rare earths hit the planet that depress prices, or if some great new discovery has been made somewhere that would depress prices. But under normal circumstances, you know, I don't believe all the gold's at Fort Knox. I believe that, you know, that it's priced officially at about $42 an ounce on the books of the United States when it's really trading over 4,000. So there's going to be a repricing of gold at some point in the future, and there's some legislation apparently being proposed to do that. But, you know, I think there was a story that came out today, Jim, that apparently our debt exceeds our GNP in the United States, you know, more in debt than we actually produce in a year. It's the first time it's ever happened. So unless they get rid of that debt, I don't know how they're going to do that. You know, gold becomes sort of your backup commodity, and it's, you know, it's worked for 5,000 years, but doesn't always go up. I mean, if you own gold, what, the 1920s and 30s, it was, what, $32 an ounce, and then they repriced it, I think at the time of Franklin Roosevelt, up to that $42 level. So, you know, there are long periods of time that it didn't go anywhere, and they just, you know, basically since the 1970s, since Nixon took us off the gold standard, and the things started to get more volatile. But still, from 1971 to 2026 is a long time. So it's like anything else. You know, you want to own some real estate. You want to own your home. You want to keep some cash around. You want to keep some emergency food stored somewhere and water. It's nice to have a generator around just in case power goes down. A solar generator in particular would be great. Having some, you know, particular cash is important, you know, in case the systems go down, you can't pay with your credit card. And having that gold and silver, you know, stuck away somewhere, you know, for the kids or for the future to offset, you know, some risks is, makes sense. So, you know, I can create all kinds of scenarios about what could happen or may not happen here in the next few years. But, you know, I think we had a big, you know, blow off top in January in silver and gold that culminated after many years. And, you know, unless they reprice it right away, that the government reprices it, or there's some other extraordinary event, I think those highs are going to hold for a while. So I'm not looking for gold to be back to 5,600, you know, next week, or silver back to 120. It could, you know, it probably will happen in time, but it could be as late as 2032. It could be 5 years from now. Some of the cycles suggest that it could be that long before you see highs again, possibly, you know. So we obviously think, just our thinking as time goes by. And meanwhile, it's tradable. So it looks tradable here. It looks like it hit a little trading bottom, but it's really unclear how far it's going to go right away. But it could trade up. And but I think you have to be really patient. So I hope I sort of answered your question. You know, you have it some salted away, and if you're a trader, you look for these little sell-offs in the shares as well as little trading opportunities to trade little bounces. But I wouldn't hold my breath that if you buy here, you know, by the end of the year, it's going to be explosive to new highs or anything like that. Anything is possible, but that's not my bet.
Is Bitcoin going to pull out of where it is, or can it fall a lot further?
It can go to zero, and that's because of that quantum computing story that I've talked about here previously. It's just a small risk, but it's a risk that the quantum computers break the code and the thing plummets to zero. And that's unfortunate because the Trump administration is trying to create a Bitcoin reserve. The U.S. government has billions and billions of dollars of Bitcoin that they've accumulated through confiscation or other things, and there's so much of the financial world that's bet on it. You know, look at all the exchange-traded funds that were created, particularly BlackRock, you know, creating that big U ETF for Bitcoin was in March of last year. And I just, you know, we hope that doesn't all happen in terms of a break of the code. But the real story, and I think I've mentioned this before, Jim, you know, is is not Bitcoin. It's the other altcoins, the other currencies out there. For example, Solana, which is another crypto, has been rallying in the last couple of weeks, doing really well while Bitcoin was going down. And there are other names out there as well. And many of these have practical utility. A lot of them have practical utility, and they have application in the financial system. So and a lot of them depend to a certain degree on the Clarity Act being passed in Congress, which has been held up by the Democrats somewhat, but though there are some Democrats supporting it. So part of this has to do with the usage and utilization of some of these altcoins, and Bitcoin is not part of that. Where Bitcoin's off by itself in its own group and atmosphere or trading and whatever it is. You know, a lot of people love it, but it's also obviously very expensive. So anything is possible with Bitcoin. It's not my first choice. Cycles call for a huge high in Bitcoin. There's a huge cycle. I'm not getting into the details here, but there's a cycle that said you could see a top last fall, which indeed happened. And I think we mentioned this last week, that same cycle says a chance of maybe some low by the end of the year, and where that low would be, whether it's at current prices or a little lower. And I'm not even discussing the quantum computing, risk here in this discussion. I'm saying just looking at the chart cycles, it might bottom later this year and have a more safe entry point. But look at the volatility this has had. I mean, since 2011, since it was created, I mean, tremendous. I mean, it started, $10, $20 or $100 and going all the way up to $126,000. So, maybe it's going back to $26,000 before it goes back to $126,000. I mean, that's, you just got to watch what's in it. So, more tracking the other altcoins and seeing what happens with U.S. Government legislation, whether that goes through or not now or later. But I think the plan is there. I mean, the pieces have been put into place in terms of getting our system more attuned to other means of conducting business. For example, the SWIFT system, which is used in international commerce, is antiquated, and there are a couple of these altcoins that have been created that can replace that with instantaneous confirmation of trades versus the SWIFT system, for example. So there are a lot of practical reasons why some of these other cryptos have been created and why there's legislation pending out there about implementing them. So that's sort of more my focus than the Bitcoin, though we do track it. And, we'd trade it, I guess, using an ETF if, we felt that it was a good trade. And, of course, you can always go short it as well. You don't only have to trade the long side of these things. So it's fun. It's its own way. It's fooled a lot of people. It's been a real wild ride here, in the last 15 years with Bitcoin, just watching the volatility. But as a trader, you watch the ETFs and the charts. There are nice little trading swings, and we've had a few already this past several months since it topped out. When it first broke from 126,000, it got to about 60 and then rallied back to 80 and now went back to under 60 again. There's trading swings for those who are looking for the action.
Mark, anything else we should be keeping a close eye on right now?
Nothing other than what's developing, in the Mideast in terms of, the news day to day that we all watch. And the big story coming up, of course, fall is the midterm elections and how, whether the, mentally ill Democratic Party who are saying they believe in communism and Marxism over capitalism, want to gain some seats in Congress and gain power. We've already seen this in the state of New York, particularly the city of New York. So we have disruptive forces out there, which, if successful, can do a lot of damage to capitalism. So hopefully they're not successful and people realize the insanity that they are promulgating. And other than that, I guess, besides that midterm risk, we just have to watch, what the Federal Reserve is going to do or not do, what the bond market is doing or not doing in terms of interest rates, and, of course, the Mideast.
Mark, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
My guest has been Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. If you have any questions for Mark, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com Radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.